Very thankful he's here. This is kind of a homecoming for me. I grew up in Central. I believe this building, not this building, but the auditorium, of course. I was born in a Western Baptist Hospital, just right down the road. My grandmother was a registered nurse there. Her name was Virgie Wicker. And we lived, somewhere in Paducah. I'm really not sure because Paducah's changed so much. But my mom brought us to church here. My sister, who's 1 year younger than I am, and my earliest recollections of worship services are here at Central. And Brother Vic was the preacher. You remember Brother Vic? What was his first name? Okay. I was saying O.D. I got half of it right. O.K.? O.D.? Now I know I'm in the right place. I'm so confused. What was his first name? Brother Vic. O.K. Vic. Right. That's correct. My wife's from Mayfield, so she knows new Brother McKendry very well. Yeah. You know me. You can't talk. You have to be silent. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. What now? I think if I remember right, I was born in 1957. Yeah. I'd have been that little? Yeah. Am I in the right place? I mean, this is... Central's where I did come to church, right? I can remember, I promise you, my mom telling me that when we prayed that Jesus walked down the center aisle and he was looking both ways to see good little boys and good little girls with their heads bowed and their eyes closed. For the longest time, I didn't think a prayer would take unless you had your eyes closed. And you had to have your head bowed. And so I literally thought Jesus walked down the center of the aisle during prayer. And I remember one morning getting brave enough to open up one eye and look down the pew, and half the people didn't have their eyes closed. And then I looked the other way, and then half the people didn't have their heads closed, or eyes closed, or heads down. And I was traumatized. I've never really gotten over it. But I do remember Brother Vic's son and I got into the communion one Sunday morning after worship. That wasn't good. That didn't turn out too good. You know what they tell you about the preacher's kids? You shouldn't run around with the preacher's kids. I did. And then I have some. Well, I'm glad to be here. I really am. And I've been looking forward to this. I truly have. I wish Kathy could be with me. Kathy grew up in Mayfield, but she's babysitting. She's Nana this week with our grandchildren, so she's unable to be with me. We wanted to make a couple of days of it and drive around, and I lived on Jefferson Avenue for a while, or Jefferson Street, and I grew up in Reedland and went to school in Reedland, so I wanted to go back home over there and just drive around and reminisce. I love Kentucky, and I love Paducah, love Reedland, and I'm really, really touched to be back and to be home. So thank you, Adam, for inviting me and Leah, and for the wonderful meal tonight. Our study is about Tabitha, or Dorcas. She goes, of course, by both names. I cannot see the PowerPoint, so I'm hoping that this is going to coordinate okay, and I believe it will. But the story of Tabitha is found in the 9th chapter of Acts. So if you'll go there with me, I want us to read that as we start. Acts chapter 9. And we're looking primarily, of course, beginning at verse 36. And this theme is minor people in the New Testament. And Tabitha, I guess, is one of those minor people when you consider maybe the Apostle Paul being the great person that he was. But Tabitha did so much good. They did a lot of good in different ways, but both did a great deal of good for the Lord's church. Look at verse 36. At Joppa there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. Tabitha is Aramaic. Dorcas is Greek. That's the difference in the two. Both names mean gazelle. So this woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. When they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he had come, they brought him to the upper room, and all the widows stood by him, weeping, showing the tunics which Dorcas had made while she was with them. But Peter put them all out and knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. Then he gave her his hand and lifted her up. And when he had called the saints and widows, he presented her alive. And it became known throughout all Joppa, and many believed on the Lord. So it was that he stayed many days in Joppa with Simon, a tanner. Lottie B. Hobbs, in her book, Daughters of Eve, devotes one chapter to Dorcas, or Tabitha. And in that chapter, here's what she says about Tabitha. I found this very interesting. Tabitha had the unique experience of being raised from the dead in the midst of her funeral proceedings and of seeing how her death was affecting others. Now that's unique. I don't know of anyone else that we read about in the Bible who had that kind of experience. And you have to ask yourself, I guess, why would Peter bring her back? Obviously, she's in a much better place. I mean, she did a lot of great good here. But to call her out of the Hadean realm, to call her out of paradise, to come back to this world of hurt and sorrow and woe and death and pain and suffering just doesn't seem fair. So why did he call her back? Why did he raise her from the dead? Well, the very end of the chapter tells us why. And it's the next to the last verse, verse 42. So that people would believe in Jesus, not in Peter, but in Jesus, that there was more to this life than just this existence, that there was a better life, there was a world to come. Victory over death was possible through Jesus. And it also proved, I believe, how valuable Tabitha or Dorcas had been to the church there in Joppa. So we ask ourselves, when we look at Tabitha, what would our funerals look like? If at our funerals we had the proceedings interrupted and we were brought back to life and able to see all of those who were gathered there and see how our passing affected them, what would that look like? Hobbs, in her book, gives another title to her book, which is very interesting. The subtitle, What Kind of Funeral Do You Want? I never thought of it that way, but what we're thinking about here is a life well lived and what that looks like and how rewarding that can be and how much of a blessing that can be to others, but ultimately, of course, what that means for eternity. So in thinking about the kind of life that Tabitha lived or the kind of life that we would like to live, I want us to think about false ways in which to measure our lives and then some true ways to measure greatness in our lives. Think about these three when you consider those false ways or false standards by which people judge their lives or judge the success of their lives. One would be by the number of days that we live, right? In other words, to have lived a long life, to have lived to be 100, for example, maybe is a sign of being a good person or of having been a kind person or a generous person or maybe a faithful person. I'm not sure, but sometimes we think of length of days as a standard by which to measure our success in this life. But you know, the Bible tells us in Psalm 90, verse 10, that the days of our lives are 70 years, and if by strength they be 80 years, yet there is sorrow and struggling, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. So basically what the psalmist is saying is, you may be guaranteed 70, if you're fortunate and blessed, 80 years in this life, but know this, no matter how long you live, your life's going to be filled with difficulties. Great happiness, but great difficulties. I think of Methuselah in Genesis 5, verse 27. Do you remember how old he was? 969 years old. Can you imagine that? I wonder what it was like to be 968 years old. You know, not a day older, you know, than 967 years old. 969 years old. Now tell me what he did. Tell me what he accomplished. Tell me one good thing that he did. One good thing that he built. You know what the Bible says about him? He had sons and daughters and he died. He had children and he died. That's all that's recorded about him. But he lived 969 years. And you would think in that time frame, you could have done something that would have been noteworthy enough to put in the account of his life. In John 21, verse 20, the Bible tells us about the acts of Jesus. How old was Jesus when he died? 33. But the Bible tells us there were not enough books at that time available to chronicle everything he accomplished in his life. It doesn't matter how long we live. What matters is, what do we do with the life we're given? It's not quantity of years. It's quality of years. And some people who are not given quantity of years do much more with the quality of their years than people who are given abundance of years. A false standard by which to measure one's success in life, or by which to measure one's greatness in life, or even happiness in life, would be length of days. Number two, what about material possessions? In other words, sometimes I think we measure our standard, or our standard of measurement, our greatness is how much we have, how much we own, the house in which we live, the car we drive, the bank accounts that we have, all of these things that come with this life, the material possessions, the material goods of this world. I think about the words of Jesus in Luke 12, verse 15. Take heed, he said, and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesses. I don't know how much Tabitha had, do you? I don't know how wealthy she was. I don't know if she was poor. I just know this. With what she had, she shared that with any and everyone, especially people who were in need. And it is amazing, isn't it, that sometimes we invest so much of ourselves and so much of our lives in our toys. But as someone once said, even he who has the most toys dies. And so it's not about the possessions that we have that is a standard by which we measure whether we've been successful or we've failed. Because with Tabitha, we don't know how old she was, nor do we know the possessions of her existence or of her life. But number three, notice also another false standard that we can consider is comparing ourselves to others. In other words, well, I'm not as bad as that person, or I'm better than that person. I don't do the things that that person does. I've never done those things. I know I'm not perfect, but I've never done those kinds of things with my life. And I have had it more difficult than that person. And therefore, it ought to be a little easier for that person. And in other words, it's more difficult for me. So comparing myself to others, that's the standard by which I'm trying to measure my life. And we're leaning, I think, our ladder up against the wrong wall. And the standard by which we measure ourselves is not someone else, but is the Lord. And sometimes people measure success based upon people they idolize, people they admire, sometimes people they covet. But it is not our place to measure ourselves by others, but it is our place, our task, to make sure that our lives measure up to the standard of God's Word. The Apostle Paul said this in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12. Listen to his words. We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who condemned themselves. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. So what is not wise? It's not wise to measure ourselves by others, by the standard of others. But instead, we should want to measure our lives, the success or failures of our lives, based upon the standard of Jesus Christ. So those are the false ones. The number of years we live, the age, our age, our material possessions, or how we rate with other people, or where we stand or fall with other people. Now, let me give you four true standards. Number one, love. Love is, of course, the heart of the matter. And it is Tabitha who gave so much of herself that in verse 39, her friends come and bring the garments she had made for them and gave those to Peter as evidence of her great love. What we love, we spend most of our time doing. What we enjoy doing is it's because of where our heart lies, where our treasures are. And it was Tabitha who was sick and who died, and Peter was close by, and they went and called for Peter. They couldn't imagine life without her. And Peter did come, and Peter did raise her from the dead. But these people brought garments that she had made for them. And I don't know what those garments looked like. It doesn't really matter, does it? What matters is they didn't give up on them. They didn't give them away. They didn't leave them or discard them or not have them with them when it mattered most. They brought those and laid those at the feet of the great apostle Peter. But it was evidence, yes, of their love for her, but more her love for them. And that's where her heart was. So the question is, where is our heart tonight? Someone once said, all conduct, words and deeds are but outgrowths of the heart. Well, that's what the Bible says, right? Proverbs 4, verse 32, or 23 rather. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. In other words, life is an inside job. If we get it right on the inside, the outside will take care of itself. What was it that Jesus said? Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So where is my heart tonight? The heart of Tabitha was a heart that beat for the Lord. The greatest commandments, Jesus said in Matthew 22, 37 through 39. One, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And the second one, the second great commandment, you're to love your neighbor as you love yourself. That was Tabitha. She loved the Lord, but she loved her neighbor. And her neighbor in need, she met those needs, or at least she attempted to meet those needs. So that's where her heart was. Her heart was with the Lord, and her heart was with her neighbors who reached out to her and who needed her. And she didn't disappoint them. She didn't let them down. I think about so many other great women in the Bible who shared that similar kind of heart. I love the story of Ruth. And I love the devotion of Ruth. I love the fact that Ruth would not leave Naomi, her mother-in-law. But Ruth went out into the fields. Ruth's a Moabitess. She's not a Jew. She goes out in the fields of Bethlehem and she works hard to provide for herself and for Naomi, her mother-in-law. And it's there that she meets Boaz, and her whole life turns around because they'll have a child by the name of Obed, and Obed will have a son by the name of Jesse, and Jesse will have 8 sons, the youngest of whom is David. Now tell me, what did Ruth look like? How tall was she? Was she skinny? What was the color of her hair? You might tell me about the color of her complexion. We don't know any of that. We don't know that about Tabitha either. But is that not how we measure people today? Is that not the standard we use to measure whether someone is good or not, valuable or not, worthy or not? We don't know what they looked like. All we know is they devoted themselves to helping others. And that grew out of, I believe, a great heart of love for God. I think about so many things in the Bible that remind me of this great love that Tabitha had for God and for her neighbor. I think about Jesus and the great love that he had for his heavenly Father. And when he was asked, who is my neighbor? Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan. And it wasn't a Jew who reached out and helped this poor man. It was a Samaritan who reached out and did what was necessary and helped the man. And there was a priest and a Levite, the religious people who passed by, didn't have anything to do with him. But it was a lowly Samaritan who stopped and helped him and got him the help, relief that he needed. And that saved his life. Jesus pointed to that as being a great example of having a heart, a kind, loving, true heart. There are people who love the world, who love worldly things, worldly possessions. The problem with that is it is diametrically opposed to the life that Jesus would want us to live. What does the Bible say? Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For if any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world passeth away, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Now, those words in 1 John 2:15 through 17 certainly, I think, give us the other side of perhaps how Tabitha refused to live her life. I don't know the size of her house. I don't know the amount of her bank account. I don't know how she got the cloth with which she did make the garments for these widows. I just know she invested in helping others, being a good neighbor, and God provided for her every single time. And then think about the foundation that is laid here of Tabitha, and that is a foundation of God. Go with me to Matthew chapter 7, just for a moment. Matthew chapter 7, and Jesus, when he ends the great Sermon on the Mount, we're thinking about standards by which we can measure our lives, true measures, not false standards. And one is a heart of love. Do I love the Lord? And out of that love, do I love others? And then a foundation is my life built upon the firm foundation of the teachings of Jesus Christ. So listen to what Jesus says, beginning with verse 24. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And so notice that the storms are identical. And even though we might be a Christian and love the Lord and are serving others and helping our neighbors, that doesn't mean there won't be storms or difficulties in our lives, sufferings and sorrows and great hardships in our lives. Those are going to come. How do you face them without Jesus? How do you get through them without the church? Here are widows who couldn't live another day without Tabitha. She's their sister in Christ. How could they get by without her? And all she did was make garments for widows who could not make them for herself. And her foundation was firm. It didn't matter what happened in the world or with culture or the storms that permeated her private life. Her soul was grounded in the gospel or the truth or in God. So, one, even though we may be a Christian and are building our lives on that solid foundation, still there are going to be storms that are going to come. The question is, how do we face those without the Lord? And I think it also is true that the Lord is telling us what really matters more than anything else is that you prepare for those kinds of storms. Tabitha was ready. No question she was ready. And the reason we know that is because after the fact, you see all of the good deeds that she had done, many of them at least, that came to the surface. Because she was all about that, and the widows brought their garments and laid them at the feet of Peter. The story is told of a man, a very wealthy man, who wanted a friend of his to build a house for him. And he told this friend of his, who was an architect, a builder, an engineer, I want you to build this house, and I want you to build this house for me, and I don't want you to spare anything. I want you to use the very best, all the best materials. I don't want you to cut any corners. I don't care what it costs. I want you to build the house. This is the way I want you to build the house. This is what I want it to look like, but I want you to use the very best materials. And so the man said, I'm leaving. I'm going on a vacation with my family. We'll be back. And at that time, the house should be through, should be finished, and we'll take ownership of the house. So they shook hands. The man went on his trip. The builder went about the task of building the man's house. But as he went along, he decided to cut a few corners, save a little money, and pocket that money for himself. And he thought the man will never know the difference because what he skimped on was on the inside. You couldn't really see that. You could see the outside, and the outside sparkled, and it was really nice and really clean and really pretty. And it looked just like what the man ordered. But you see on the inside, those kinds of things that are really important. This man said he'll never see those. He'll never know those. He doesn't know a building. I know building. And so he cut corners. He pocketed the money, made some money on the side. The man came back, looked at the house, loved the house. He said, it's exactly what I wanted. They had dinner that night in the house. He said, you've done a great job. I love this house. But I love you more. And he took the keys to that house and he handed them to his friend. And he said, now this is your house. So what kind of house are you building? What kind of house am I building? Am I cutting corners? Am I pocketing the profits? Am I skimping here or there? Does it look good on the outside, but really is nothing that will last very long on the inside? Tabitha's foundation was very sure because it was built upon Christ. So a heart of love, a foundation of rock, or a foundation of God, the gospel, Jesus Christ. But number three, a life of service. Everybody has a talent, right? Everybody has a talent. I know in Matthew 25, beginning with verse 14, we talk about the parable of the talents. And really we think about talents like we're like the talent to play the guitar, or the talent to, you know, to shoot a basketball, or the talent to you know, to play the piano, do this or do that, you name it. That's not what the talents are there in Matthew 25, 14 and following. It's a talent of money. It's about investment. But the key to that parable is the man gave the five-talent man, two-talent man, one-talent man the talents they got because he knew that's what they could handle. So he knew their abilities. All of us have gifts. All of us have talents. All of us have something that we can do. The question is, are we doing it? What the Lord has given us, are we investing it? Or are we like the one-talent man, just burying it and never sharing it? That wasn't Tabitha. I don't know everything that Tabitha could do, but I know one good thing she could do. She could sew. Joppa is about 38 miles north of Jerusalem. It's on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. When you go to the Holy Land, you fly into Joppa, Tel Aviv. Then you travel south to Jerusalem in a bus, but you fly into Joppa. Tel Aviv, still a great seaport, and still a great many exports, imports in and out of there. And that's where Tabitha lived. But you know what else you had there? You had a lot of widows, because a lot of men died at sea. There are a lot of ships that never made it to port. There are a lot of ships that left out on that port and never got to their destination because they perished at sea. There were a lot of widows apparently in Joppa, a great many of them. Tabitha saw an opportunity. She didn't say, "How much money will I make?" She just took advantage of the opportunity. God opened a door for her. She had a talent and she used it. In a certain town, there was a wealthy man, a prominent businessman, who came home one day and there was a young man in his front yard. He was digging a hole. And he stopped the young man and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, your wife's going to give you a magnolia tree for your birthday, and I'm giving you the hole." "Well, maybe that's all I can do, is dig the hole. But at least I can do that." And that's what a heart of service is. And that's what Tabitha was up to. And that's what Tabitha did with her life. She gave. Jesus said, "Whoever is greatest among you will be your servant." And even he himself said, he came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Mark 10:45. The one person who should have come to this earth, deserved to be served, didn't do that. He came and served others to the point he died on the cross. Now, you know, that's the one thing he could do that none of us in this room could ever do. Because it would take a perfect sacrifice to do what Jesus did at Calvary. But what he had, he used. And then there is this idea of words of encouragement. And it's amazing how powerful our words are. The book of Proverbs has so many things to say about it. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Just a few words. For example, Proverbs 25, verse 11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a pitcher of silver. The king, when he would invite guests to his table, would have a basket that was made of silver. It was covered with silver, and in that there would be apples, but there would be a gold apple in that basket. And to his guest, he would take that gold apple and he would hand it to them. And what a treasure that must have been. You think about how much gold goes for today. I'm sure it was still quite expensive in those days. But that's what a kind word is like at the right time, at the right moment, just when you need it. I think about Barnabas, who is a great encourager. You know, Saul of Tarsus, I don't think he makes it, do you? If it's not Barnabas who stands up for him. A little earlier in Acts chapter 9, verse 27, you know, when he goes to Jerusalem, they don't want to have anything to do with him. And Barnabas says, he's a changed man. I can tell you that. Have you ever thought about Lydia? Another famous woman in the book of Acts, in Acts 16, verses 13 through 15. Do you remember who she was? Seller of purple. Pretty good businesswoman. Had her own household, which meant she was wealthy. You remember what she was doing when Paul got to Philippi? They were down by the river, and they were praying. Remember? And Paul knew that, so he and Silas went and joined them. And it was there that he preached the gospel, and Lydia's heart was opened. And she became a Christian. Her household obeyed the gospel. They became Christians. And then Lydia, remember, begged them to stay with her. And Paul stayed with her. And because of that, the church in Philippi started. It probably started in her home. And there would be a Philippian jailer and his family, a Roman Philippian jailer, who would come and join that fellowship. That's how the church started. You know how it began? With one simple act of hospitality. And we just don't do that anymore. We're too busy. But she could do that. She could do a lot of other things too, apparently. But she could do that, and that she did. I don't know of anybody Barnabas ever baptized. Do you? But Barnabas sure could encourage people. And that led to Paul baptizing who knows how many. So there are these standards by which you truly can measure your life and the success of your life. And one is a heart of love. Another is a foundation of God, a life of service, and words of encouragement. We may not be able to do a lot of things, but we can encourage each other and we can lift each other up. You've heard the poem, I'm sure, by Linda Ellis, simply entitled The Dash. I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time they spent alive on earth, and now only those who love them know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that still can be rearranged. To be less quick to anger and show appreciation more and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's action to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about you and how you lived your dash? It's amazing. Tabitha, in the middle of her funeral procession or proceedings, was raised from the dead and got to see all the people who had come to mourn her, celebrate her, and express their love for her. That would be the kind of funeral I would want. Because at that point, nothing else really does matter, does it? So what do we learn from Tabitha? One very simple lesson, and that is we need to do whatever we can do with whatever the Lord has given us to use, wherever the Lord has planted us. Thank you.